This is the 32nd broadcast in the America Looks Abroad series, presented by the officers and staff members of the Foreign Policy Association. This nonpartisan organization, open to all who are interested in American foreign policy, offers accurate information on current international events. In the world of today, foreign affairs are your affairs. Germany's conquest of France this week presents Britain with unprecedented dangers that immediately threaten its existence. Mr. A. Randall Elliott, Research Associate of the Foreign Policy Association, will discuss the plight of Britain. Mr. Elliott.
Good afternoon. When Adolf Hitler handed the French envoys his terms of armistice on Friday, the Nazis achieved their greatest success in wiping out Germany's humiliation for its World War defeat. Their next big objective is to crush the British Empire. German troops are rapidly completing their occupation of France. And for the first time in history, Britain must face the entire continent of Europe alone. As Winston Churchill said last Tuesday after French Premier Marshal Pétain had sued for peace, the Battle of France is over. The Battle of Britain is about to begin. The entire Western world has a stake in this battle. As long as Britain holds out, the conquered nations of Europe, Czechoslovakia, Poland, Denmark, Norway, Holland, Belgium, France, can all hope that their independence will be restored. Britain remains as their last plausible rallying point for resistance to German domination. The Reich, for its part, sees Britain as the last obstacle to a complete German victory and as a constant threat to enjoyment of its recent gains. Throughout the war, Germany's chief invectives have been leveled against Britain, and nothing short of actual invasion of the islands will satisfy the Nazis. The possibilities of such invasion are numerous. Germany now controls the entire European coast facing the British Isles. From the Norwegian port of Bergen opposite the Shetland Islands to France's extreme western port of Brest, just south of England itself, the world's greatest military machine is ready to strike at Britain. From bases along this extended shore, Nazi planes harass British naval units and coastal defenses. Under cover of their powerful air force, German troops may use small, fast motor boats to cross the channel to Britain. Presumably, they would land somewhere in Scotland, where many parts of the coast are desolate and almost without defenses. German troops may also be carried to Britain in airplanes. A few weeks ago, Allied sources estimated that Germany has as many as 20,000 parachutists in reserve for a direct attack on England, and up to 2,000 transport planes ready to ferry Nazi soldiers to the islands. The bulk of an invading army, however, along with supporting heavy artillery and armored equipment, would have to enter Britain on surface vessels, and could succeed in landing only if the initial Nazi forces gained control of some British ports and harbor facilities. Toward this end, the Nazis may be expected to use every resource at their command, coupled with the suddenness and surprise that characterized their decisive attacks on Norway, Holland, and Belgium. Once they get a foothold on the islands, their chances for success against British troops would be very good. Britain's army is overwhelmingly outnumbered by the Nazi forces and suffers from a greater inferiority of military equipment than at any other time during the war. Nazi spokesmen, as we know, have frequently claimed possession of a secret weapon unequaled in its power of destruction. If indeed they do have a weapon of this kind, they apparently have saved it to use against Britain. It may be anything from a new kind of troop-carrying submarine to the intensive use of poison gas. Gas has not yet been employed in this war. The rapidity of movement would have made its use almost equally dangerous for both sides. It might be used very effectively, however, against British troops entrenched in their own island fortress. Germany has imported almost 60,000 tons of arsenic ores per year for the past 3 years, or 12 times the normal world consumption. Although there is no proof that these imports have been used for the production of gas, arsenic has very few commercial uses, and the intensity of German military preparations during recent years strongly suggests that the increased flow of this super poison to the Reich may be associated with Nazi war methods. Britain fully realizes that its very existence is at stake. To repel attack, it has strengthened its coastal defenses, concentrated most of its fleet in home waters, and evacuated its armies from France along with a large supply of guns, munitions, and even motorized equipment. Almost every resident has been assigned some duty for home defense. Alfred Dupp Cooper, British Minister of Information, stated this week that nearly all of Britain's strength is concentrated inside the island fortress, and claimed that the fortress, well defended and well supplied, will hold out until the enemy's efforts are exhausted. As always, Britain still relies on its superior fleet to keep hostile surface transports from approaching its coasts. But as the successful German bombing of British ships in the Norwegian campaign demonstrated 2 months ago, a fleet is not able to operate effectively in narrow waters, while under constant attack from airplanes based on nearby shores. During the coming struggle, Britain at least will not be hampered by one costly democratic weakness which the dictatorships have exploited very effectively in the past. Until the last few months, the Western democracies have suffered in diplomacy and in war because they were genuinely unwilling to fight. Germany and Italy, on the other hand, have been spurred on by the conviction that they had nothing to lose, and have recklessly thrown their whole strength into each successive move. During the present war, British and French troops have hesitated to risk the main body of their air, naval, and manpower for anything less than actual defense of the homeland. For France, this policy resulted in the piecemeal destruction of its armed forces and eventual surrender of the country. Some British troops have similarly been destroyed and their equipment lost, but most of Britain's forces are now prepared to make their last stand at home. There is no longer any single reason for Britain to conserve its strength, and we can confidently expect that every ounce of its armed might will be directed toward preventing invasion of the British Isles themselves. Britain's one chance for success lies in the possibility, however slim, of withstanding the inevitable downpour of destruction from Germany's vastly superior air force until the British fleet can be augmented from abroad. While the bulk of Britain's strength must be used to preserve itself against the immediate shock of attack, its problem is not alone one of home defense. Britain's only hope for eventual victory lies in the possibility of its maintaining an effective blockade against Germany and Italy. This problem is somewhat simplified now that the Axis powers dominate the entire continent, because Britain no longer risks the danger that supplies may be transshipped to the enemy through bordering neutral countries such as Belgium, Holland, and Scandinavian states. The British fleet now blockades these former neutrals just as ruthlessly as it blockades Germany proper, and if the war continues through another winter, the whole of Europe will be threatened with a major famine. Germany and Italy, of course, can get additional supplies from the Balkans, where British influence is rapidly declining. But the continent of Europe is by no means self-sufficient, and if Britain repels the impending invasion, the Axis powers will have to overcome the British blockade or face defeat. The longer Britain resists, moreover, the stronger its offensive capacity will become. The British have learned that they cannot win this war by remaining on the defense. During the last few days, the Royal Air Force has initiated the most vicious air raids on Germany. For the first time, bombing planes released their fire over Berlin. In order to hamper the enemy's advance, as well as to promote dissatisfaction behind his lines, attacks of this kind will probably be intensified in the future. In this way, the British hope to reinforce their present command of the sea. The British fleet must retain command of the seas not only to blockade Germany and Italy, but also to obtain supplies from abroad, and to draw on the needed reserves of manpower from the Empire. At present, most of the German Navy is still confined to its North Sea and Baltic bases, while the Italian fleet is effectively bottled up in the Mediterranean. But if these naval units should gain access to the Atlantic, Britain itself would be threatened by a tremendous German-Italian blockade, particularly if the Axis powers were reinforced with a portion of the French Navy. Already, the British Isles are vulnerable to a partial blockade, owing to the proximity of new German air and submarine bases across the English Channel. The harbors of southern and eastern England, through which almost 65% of British imports normally enter, are under constant menace of Nazi air attack. And as the Germans begin to utilize their newly conquered ports for submarine warfare, shipping will be able to approach Britain only under the most acute danger of being torpedoed. At one time during the World War, when Germany had submarine bases at Ostend and Zeebrugge in Belgium, but none in France, Holland, and Norway, as they have today, Germany's unrestricted submarine campaign cut Britain's food stores to the bare necessities for only 3 weeks. The same degree of effectiveness at this time would reduce the islands to starvation. One of the foremost dangers confronting Britain is that the Germans will occupy Ireland to establish air and naval bases there, as they did in Norway. The government of Éire, controlling Southern Ireland, is neutral in the present war and has frequently been cited as ideal soil for Nazi fifth column activity. The Irish have always resented English domination, and despite Éire's present place as a self-governing dominion in the British Empire, many of the Irish are extremely bitter toward the London government. A German invasion of Éire might be effected directly or in connection with the intermediate occupation of outlying points such as the Faroe Islands and Iceland, which British troops occupied when Germany invaded Denmark in April. If the Reich succeeds in taking these northern islands, and especially Ireland on the west coast of England, Britain's lifeline to Canadian, American, and other overseas supplies will be in dire peril. In such a contingency, moreover, the Nazis might even abandon their plans for a costly invasion of Britain in favor of siege warfare. Nazi planes have easy bombing targets in the English industrial areas, which are among the greatest in the world and are concentrated in small, compact districts. If Great Britain's traffic with the outside world could also be reduced, resistance in the islands would inevitably crumble. This plan would be especially practicable if the Italian Navy were free to join in the blockade of Britain. Britain could not long survive a siege of the islands, and must therefore permit no enemy warships to escape from the Mediterranean. A substantial portion of the British fleet is still retained in these waters to discourage Italian ships from leaving their own bases, although the British Admiralty may now consider withdrawing some of the Mediterranean fleet for more active and more needed service in home waters. Britain would then have to rely solely on its control over the Suez Canal and Gibraltar to keep Italian ships out of the Atlantic. The eastern gate to the Mediterranean at Suez is secure, but Britain's effective use of the Rock of Gibraltar depends on the goodwill of nationalist Spain. A successful attack on Gibraltar could be initiated from Spain. The Spanish government, moreover, is very cordial toward both Mussolini and Hitler, who aided General Franco during the Spanish Civil War. As long as Spain remains neutral, Britain has little to fear from the Italian Navy, but a huge question mark hangs over the future course of Spanish policy. Until this month, General Franco repeatedly stressed his government's neutrality in the European War, but when Italy entered the conflict, Spain became a non-belligerent favorable to its partners in the Axis. Nationalist spokesmen have made no secret of their territorial designs on Gibraltar, and frequent demonstrations of students clamoring for Gibraltar have been intensified in Madrid during recent weeks. Spanish imperialists also claim French Morocco and the small mountain republic of Andorra, now under the joint guardianship of France and Spain. Last week, Spanish troops occupied the international zone of Tangier across the strait from Gibraltar, and it is not improbable that Spain might be induced to join Italy and Germany in the present war by the promise of coveted territorial gains at the Allies' expense. For the immediate future, this means at the expense of Britain. The British Empire has weathered many crises in its long history, and has generally emerged from them the stronger for its struggles. Threatened on every side, however, the Empire now faces its greatest test of all time. There is an old saying that Britain loses battles, but wins wars. If this maxim is still to be valid, the coming Battle of Britain is certainly one battle which must not be lost.
Mr. A. Randall Elliott, Research Associate of the Foreign Policy Association, was today's speaker in the America Looks Abroad series. The subject of Mr. Elliott's discussion was The Plight of Britain. If you would like a free copy of this talk, send your request to the Foreign Policy Association, 8 West 40th Street, New York City. That's Foreign Policy Association, 8 West 40th Street, New York City. We invite you to tune in next Sunday to hear another speaker in the America Looks Abroad series. This is the National Broadcasting Company, RCA Building, Radio City, New York.